podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the AI Premier League Preview Pod. On the night when Hoffenheim boss Julian Nagelsmann find out exactly how tough it is to play at Anfield on a European night, we'll be covering that game a tiny bit, and obviously we'll be covering the upcoming game against Arsenal this weekend. On tonight's pod, I'm delighted to welcome on AI regular and host of the Academy podcast, Guy Drinkle, and Arsenal correspondent for Goal.com, Chris Wheatley. Evening, guys.
Evening.
Good to have you both on. Chris, you watched the game as a neutral. Must have been quite entertaining for me and Guy. I think we were talking about it before the pod, just talking about how many goals we needed to feel comfortable there. It got a bit crazy.
I mean, I was expecting Liverpool to score quite a few tonight. You know, like you said, it was a European night at Anfield, and you always expect goals, but I wasn't expecting that many. And it doesn't really bode too well for the shaky Arsenal defence ahead of the weekend's game.
Yeah, those first 20 minutes were somewhat reminiscent of a game I remember a while back when your lot did come to Anfield. So yeah, I'm sure it's going to be definitely an entertaining game this weekend as well, because as we were talking beforehand, neither of us can defend. But Guy, just before I get things kicked off as well, I mean, that must have been nervy for you as well.
Yeah. I mean, What were we on? 6-3 on aggregate, and it still felt nervy.
You're like, can we just make it 7? Let's make it 7.
Yeah. I mean, when you have to score 8 goals over 2 games to feel comfortable, I think you know what the problem is there.
Yeah, it says a great deal, and I'm sure we're going to come on to talk about that when we touch on Liverpool. But before that, I want to kick things off with Arsenal and bring you in, Chris. And I know we spoke last season towards the end of it, and with this being the season where Arsenal finally finished outside of the top four, first time in 20 years, felt sort of pivotal. And I know we spoke quite a lot of it at the time, actually, about how the fan base and some of the divisions within the fan base over Wenger did seem to become more and more ingrained as the season went on. Whether that's just the impression you get from online, and we spoke about that for sure with these, those angsty protests and the Arsenal fan TV specials and everything like that. But obviously the board stuck by Wenger, and he's here to guide you through another Premier League season. But despite sort of the Charity Shield success and the frenetic sort of opening day win against Leicester, it feels as though, and this could just be my opinion, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels as though any slight sort of backstep or defeat like the one to Stoke on the weekend is just an excuse to bring up more of that negativity and more of that tension. So I mean, before we go into that, I just wanted to ask you, I mean, what was your reaction and what you thought the general reaction of the Arsenal fan base was to finally missing out, albeit narrowly, on the top four trophy, if you want, last season?
I think it was a mixture of disappointment and acceptance as well. Obviously, the disappointment for the fact that Arsenal had been so used to qualifying for the Champions League every single season since Wenger's been at the club. But then the acceptance, the fact that it might give Arsenal a bit of a breather, the fact they're out of the Champions League now, they have something different to concentrate on. And I don't think Arsene Wenger's going to take the Europa League as seriously as he did with the Champions League. Saying that, he didn't actually take the group stage that serious at times, playing David Ospina in goal for crucial group stage matches. He didn't always play his best team. I think the Europa League is going to be a breath of fresh air for Arsenal. I think the likes of Jack Wilshere are going to get a run out. I'm sure we'll speak about him later. But, Arsenal will get to field the fringe players. And in general, I think Arsenal fans, by the end of it, were just happy that it wasn't lower than fifth. They didn't finish lower than fifth. And in general, I think Arsenal weren't good enough to finish in the top four. The table doesn't lie. I would say a general mixture of disappointment and acceptance.
Yeah, because of course it was a record points total for a fifth place team, wasn't it? I think it was, even despite that. And I mean, from my perspective as a Liverpool fan, I was thinking, although we left it to the last day to beat Middlesbrough to get that top four spot, I think it should have been, in my opinion, far more comfortable for us. So I think it was just an indication of that last season you were just slightly off that pace, even despite the record points total. I think it was sort of a crazy season if you look at the way Chelsea performed as well, things like that. But to touch upon that sort of fan base division, and the reason why I wanted to talk about it was because, although I don't want to bore you with the whole Wenger thing, but I just think it's so, it just seems so inevitable that it's going to keep coming back up and back up. And the fact that he remained the manager, despite it seemed almost huge opposition, but also fans divided on it, and he seemed to have a little bit of fun with it himself, didn't he? With the whole, like, I know what I'm doing, but I'm not going to tell you yet. And that seemed to breed only more sort of tension and negativity around things at one stage. I remember I asked you this last season, so I'll keep it brief, but do you feel that tension is sort of like irrevocable?
Irrevocable.
Yeah, there you go. That's the one.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think last season we saw how powerful social media could be with the likes of Arsenal Fan TV and I'd say Twitter as well, obviously played its part in sort of airing huge views on, and somewhat over the top views on, Arsene Wenger, who, you know, has been at the club for a long time, probably didn't deserve some of the abuse that he got. But what I would say is that while there haven't been any noticeable protests yet, other than the usual rants on YouTube, I'd say that there's a kind of sense that it could boil over again. And the game against Stoke, you know, after that, a lot of fans were saying, it's sort of same old Arsenal. We've seen this last season, the way they imploded defensively. They couldn't take their chances, although I'd say they were a bit unlucky to have a goal ruled out for offside.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it could seriously affect how the team perform with the fan tension. I think Arsenal probably maybe a couple of defeats from that happening, as we saw last season. It could easily, sort of ruin the season and cause big problems. I think last campaign was really difficult for Arsene Wenger. It really backfired on him, the fact that he made that decision on his contract at the end of the season instead of at the start or, early on. And he said that it's affected the players psychologically. They're asking, why haven't you signed, boss? Are you going to be here next season? And he couldn't give them an answer. I think that was a big, big problem. And if you don't know where your manager's going to be next season, it's going to affect you psychologically. Although I don't think it should have affected them how it did. There were some games where, for example, Crystal Palace away, it just looked like the players really weren't playing for the manager. It was just a lack of concentration in every department. But I wouldn't go over the top with the start to the season. I think the game against Leicester, defensively Arsenal were poor, but they showed how good they were in attack. Alexis Sanchez is still to come back as well. And I'd say in general that it doesn't look too bad. And I think the fans can sometimes blow it a little bit out of proportion. But they do definitely need to sign a couple of players before the window closes.
Yeah, that's something that we'll come back to for sure. I think both teams probably agree on that when they're looking at their transfer window so far. But in terms of your own view on the manager, I'm trying to remember where you were placed on it towards the end of last season. But it's interesting that you mentioned that sort of social media magnifying glass that was given to fans' views by things like Arsenal Fan TV and things like that. And one of those things that gets emphasised quite a lot is the pursuit of other managers. Thomas Tuchel being rumoured to take over at Chelsea, all these things like that. But what was your view on the manager? I mean, it's irrelevant now, but did you think he should have persisted?
I kind of flip flopped on the issue throughout the season, to be honest. A typical journalist, I'd say. But no, I think Arsene Wenger, you have to really give him a lot of respect for what he's done. And when I write a piece on Wenger, and when it's an opinion piece, I try and be as respectful as I can. But as the season went on, there were games like West Brom away where Arsenal were really, really poor, couldn't win a ball in the air. And there was obviously those plane banners flying over. And it got to that point where it just looked like it, like you said, irrevocable.
Oh, nice. Yeah. First time there.
And I just say, personally, I think in the end, it was the right decision to keep Arsene Wenger because the club clearly didn't plan for him to leave the club. I mean, there were no formal contacts made for any particular manager. I personally think someone should have sort of made that those plans to bring in a new manager, someone like Ivan Gazidis, the chief executive, who said that it's going to be a catalyst for change. Unfortunately, there hasn't been huge changes at Arsenal this summer. They brought in a new fitness coach. They brought in Jens Lehmann, but just as a general first team coach, not for the goalkeepers, which has been an area of weakness. So in general, we haven't seen huge changes. They've made two signings as well. For me, I'm not going to judge Wenger until the end of the transfer window, because you never know. He's made late signings before, but as it stands, Arsenal have sort of done half a job, and they've still got a bit to go before they can challenge for a major trophy.
Yeah, you mentioned that sort of the work that remains to be done in the transfer window. I think fans probably feel the same way at Liverpool as well. But one aspect of that work, I guess you can look on positively, if of course it stays the same way, is Alexis Sanchez. I mean, you mentioned him beforehand. He is still to return. There was obviously a point in the summer where people speculating that both himself and Ozil could be off. As the situation stands now, the same with Chamberlain as well. Obviously, the strong links between Chamberlain seem to be at the start of the window and Liverpool. Some of those seem to be resurfacing now. But is it right, as I understand it, that Ozil, Chamberlain and Sanchez all have 1 year left on their contract? So as it stands, and they're not signing new ones, it appears as though that they could leave next summer for free. Is that a pretty...
That's right, yeah.
It's an uneasy situation to be in, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, I've spoken about how the managerial uncertainty affected the players last season, and Arsenal don't have that problem this season. But what they do have is player uncertainty, like you just said, with the contracts. And I think each case is different. You've got Mesut Ozil, who's, you know, he attracts an array of opinions. You know, a lot of people love him. A lot of people hate him. A lot of people aren't really sure whether he's, you know, right for Arsenal and the Premier League. But for me, I'll do everything to keep Ozil at the club. I think he offers guaranteed assists. He creates so many chances. He's created the most chances in the league so far this season. And while his body language maybe doesn't, you know, suit everyone, for me, he is a vital player to keep, as is Alexis Sanchez, who obviously I've written on Goal, and our Man City correspondent has already said that Sanchez wants to join Manchester City. But Arsenal are keeping firm at the moment. They don't want Sanchez to go, obviously, because he contributed so many goals and assists last season. And it's a difficult one. Do you let one of your best players leave for free at the end of the season? Or do you sell him now to a direct rival for 50, 60 million? I think Arsenal are doing the right thing. But what I would say is that I don't think that situation is over yet. I think City will come in with a late bid towards the end of the window. And it'd be interesting, because if it is 50, 60 million, will Arsenal still, you know, reiterate their stance that they're going to keep him? I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. I think Wenger's made mistakes in the past with letting players go to rivals, Sami Nasri, Robin Van Persie to Man United, so obviously the biggest. But Arsenal need to keep hold of Alexis Sanchez, even if it's for this season, and then worry about what happens at the end of the season. You never know, they could end up winning the league or getting back in the Champions League. Sanchez could decide to stay. But if you look at his history of where he's been, Udinese, Barcelona, in Argentina as well, he doesn't stay at a club for more than 2 to 3 seasons. He's a short-term player. He's a winner. And you can understand why he probably would want to go to somewhere like Manchester City, where, you know, they have a squad which is capable of challenging in all fronts. Finally, on Oxlade-Chamberlain, obviously he's been linked with Liverpool. He's an interesting one. I don't think Arsenal should keep him till the end of his contract. Right. At the moment, he's indicated that he's not going to be signing a new deal. He's got the same agent as Raheem Sterling, AD Ward, who's obviously
popular guy.
Quite a very popular guy among Arsenal officials and obviously many other clubs. Not too big a fan of him, but I think Oxlade-Chamberlain should be sold, maybe to Chelsea or Liverpool for 35 million, because if he doesn't sign a new deal, he's going to go for free and Arsenal are going to lose out big time. I don't think he contributes enough either to the team. He's probably going to guarantee you maybe 10 goals, say maximum this season. He doesn't do enough in terms of end product. So in general, I'd say do everything you can to sign Ozil, keep Sanchez until the end of the season, and sell Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's certainly an interesting view. I think, as you mentioned with Sanchez, I don't expect that situation's fully over. I can imagine City trying to come in late, and as you mentioned, it's that. Yeah, that decision, you're trying to weigh up whether the financial gain makes sense as opposed to letting the player leave for free the next year. But then again, you know, if he goes to City, what sort of symbolic message does that send as well? Mm. Chamberlain, it's interesting you mentioned Chamberlain like that, actually. But I think when Liverpool I think of Chamberlain and I think of him maybe joining, sort of view him as sort of a player who could be a squad player, but you know, as you mentioned, chipping with maybe 10 goals here or there, but playing a variety of positions. Anyway, just to move on from that, actually, and talk about some of the signings that have come in. Obviously, Lacazette and again, I'm going to mess this up, but Kolasinac, yes, yeah, he's come in as well. Looks absolutely like a tank. I'm sure people seem to have noticed that. Just some thoughts on their early performances. I know Lacazette was a player that you'd monitored for a very, very long time before making that decision, actually, to bring him in. Have they both impressed?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Lacazette is a player, like you said, they've been tracking for a while now. Arsene Wenger tried to sign him last season. Lacazette basically said no, wanted to stay in France. And fair play to Arsene Wenger. He's managed to get him this summer for a club record fee. And Lacazette is a Lyon boy. He's been at Lyon his entire career, and it's a big step up, obviously, to the Premier League, but he took to it straight away. He scored a fantastic goal, header against Leicester on his debut 2 minutes into the game. And he was unlucky not to score in his second game at Stoke. Obviously, that offside call was debatable. Yeah, but he's a goal poacher. He scored 28 goals in France last season. And I think Arsenal have been lacking a goal poacher since the days of Robin van Persie, Eduardo da Silva, you know, those players who can just finish. And you know, they've tried to sign strikers in the past. You know, never forget that famous pursuit of Luis Suarez, of course, the £40 million and £1 bid.
Did that happen? Oh,
okay. Yeah, it did. It did happen. And Stephen Gerrard was talking on BT Sport the other day about that bid as well. And basically, he said that he told Suarez, why would you go and join a team which can't guarantee you like winning a trophy? Yeah. Why don't you stay at Liverpool for one more season and go to Barcelona then? But yeah, no, he's been a good signing. And I said Kolasinac as well. He's made of muscle. You know, his, like you said, his biceps are bigger than my head. He was named in the Bundesliga Team of the Year. And so far, he's really impressed for me. I think he's versatile, and Arsenal lack, you know, sort of versatile defenders who are good in across the back line. He's a left wing back, but he can get assists as well. But what I would say is, despite those signings, I still think, like I said earlier, Arsenal need to strengthen, particularly in central midfield and on the wing. And I think Thomas Lemar is one of these players who Arsene Wenger really wants. He's been the subject of three bids. Biggest coming in at about £45 million. And I think that's another situation which isn't completely done yet. Monaco don't want to sell him, but
he's another Monaco lad, isn't he? Yeah, they're just, he's just another, selling everybody.
Yeah, it's a fire sale this summer. But I think, again, it's probably going to be one of these last minute jobs which Arsenal may be able to get him for, you know, £45-50 million. But their president is a tough guy, tough cookie, Vasilev, and I don't think he's going to sell him for anything less than £45 million.
Yeah, it does seem like the prices have just gone crazy. Obviously, they're also looking at you know, Kylian Mbappe and seeing where he wants to go. That seems to have gone quiet for a little bit. But you mentioned that the midfield, or the need for a signing midfield, defensively, and just to come on to, I guess, how you started the season. You mentioned the game against Leicester. You were very good going forward, not good in defence. Then the defeat to Stoke as well. In some of the reactions I've seen to those games, I mean, one of the things that seems to have come up, and I guess it may reinforce the need for those defensive signings, is some weird tactical choices that Wenger's made in terms of the players he's playing, maybe out of position, and going to a back three, having full-backs, players, centre-backs, who they don't seem entirely comfortable with it. Could you just explain a little bit more about that and some of the weird things that you might have seen so far?
Yeah, I mean, weird is the right word to describe some of the changes and some of the selections Arsene Wenger's made, especially in that game against Stoke. But I think against Leicester, Arsenal were really unlucky. Rob Holding, you know, is a really young 21-year-old centre-back. I think Jamie Vardy sort of, you know, really had the better of him in that game. And I think Holding's confidence completely went. And that's why he didn't start the game against Stoke. So Wenger changed it around for Stoke. And he put Mustafi, Monreal and Kolasinac as the three defenders at the back. So Monreal was obviously in the middle. And he's a left-back usually, but he's been playing at left centre-back. So what you had was two left-backs basically playing as centre-backs. And then you had Oxlade-Chamberlain as a left wing-back. It does sound a bit confusing. And as you can imagine, Arsenal fans were sort of bewildered by why Per Mertesacker wasn't playing, because obviously he's a guy who has his critics. You know, he doesn't have pace, but what he does have is organisational qualities, leadership skills. He's the club captain, and he showed in the FA Cup final against Chelsea that he's, you know, you can't write him off yet. And I think he'll be back in defence for the game at Anfield. And I would say that someone like Oxlade-Chamberlain, I don't think he's going to be starting at Anfield, but you never know. Kolasinac should really be playing at left back. In general, I just think there's a lack of fluency in the Arsenal defence. They don't really know what they're doing at times. And I think the zonal marking certainly doesn't always help, because they don't actually attack the ball. A lot of the players stay static. Someone like Granit Xhaka as well. He's lost the ball quite a lot in recent games, and he's another young guy in his early 20s, but he really does need to improve. He plays in a key area of the pitch, and he does have a tendency to give the ball away. As we saw against Stoke, that's where their goal came from, and Hesse took advantage, scored a great goal. In general, really weird defensive changes, but I'm sure Arsene Wenger is going to put Mertesacker back in defence for the game against Liverpool.
And you saw some of those changes in pre-season, didn't you, as well? So it's not like they've come out of nowhere.
Arsene Wenger played Mohamed Elneny. Yeah. He's a defensive midfielder, centre-back in pre-season. He also played Ainsley Maitland-Niles, who's an 18-year-old kid at centre-back, and he's actually a right-back. So, yeah, it was really strange. Arsenal really should be probably going into the market for a Virgil van Dijk. Someone, you know, top class centre back, because they've just sold Gabriel to Valencia. Callum Chambers as well, doesn't look like he's got a future at Arsenal. I don't think Arsenal's defensive options look particularly good going into the new season. It just shows that Arsenal really do need to strengthen across the pitch. You know, they need a new winger, they need a central midfielder, and they probably do need a centre back as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously not going to win many fans there talking about Van Dijk. Nothing would surprise me with that deal, to be honest. But just before we move on to me talking about, I mean, you mentioning Mertesacker there, and you're just thinking about the pace that we've got maybe against him or things like that. But before we get on to talking about, or at least a little bit about the game this weekend, I just wanted to talk a bit briefly about Jack Wilshere, actually. Obviously having noticed the bust-up he had in the under-23s game, obviously tough challenge came in at him. He's just coming back from injury, things like that. But I mean, just from your perspective as a fan and obviously somebody who covers Arsenal so heavily, I mean, is it sad, obviously, to see the way in which Wilshere's career has turned? And do you see any way back for him, really?
Yeah, I do think it's a little bit sad, but I wouldn't write him off just yet. That's one thing I would say. Sure. I think in that under-23s match, you know, Man City players were targeting him throughout the game. And you have to bear in mind that he's just come back from, you know, another major injury, broken leg.
Yeah, of course.
He's not close to winning a starting spot in the Arsenal 11. And also, you know, it's a World Cup year coming up as well. So he's got all those things probably going on in his mind. He's not sure that he's going to be at Arsenal next summer or next season. So you take all those points into account, and I think his reaction is kind of understandable, although I'm not condoning what he did. I think he has a future at Arsenal, at least for this season. And as I said earlier, I think he's going to be involved in the Europa League and the Cup games, just so he can sort of get fast-tracked back into the team and maintain his fitness. It's going to be difficult for him because obviously Granit Xhaka and Aaron Ramsey at the moment, they seem to be the sort of central midfield pairing. And then in attack, it's Lacazette, Ozil and Sanchez. So it's, you can't really see a way back sort of for Jack Wilshere to start week in, week out. But I can see him playing sort of an impact role from the bench, similar to Olivier Giroud. And I think he will get minutes this season. I do think it's sad because he's obviously he's an Arsenal boy. He's been at the club since he's 9 years old. And I think that's what the fans love to see. I mean, I love to see a player who's pretty much born and bred as an Arsenal fan, although he's a West Ham fan. But, you know, he's been at the club all his life. And I think Arsenal mean a lot to him. And that's one of the reasons he's decided to stay. He's had offers to go to places like Italy, and a lot of Premier League clubs are interested. But, you know, in the end, I think Arsene Wenger probably doesn't want to let him go either. He's instilled so much faith in Wilshere, the player. He stood by him injury after injury. And, of course, he had that spell at Bournemouth last season. But all in all, I think, you know, Wilshere's still got a lot to prove. And, like I said, with a World Cup year coming up, I think he can probably play a part in the season, at least.
Yeah, something about Jack Wilshere's Italian adventure. Just missed opportunities there.
Probably involve a cigar and lots of drinking.
I'm not going to...
No comment.
Yeah, no rumours are going to be indulged on this show, trust me. just before, obviously, towards the end of the pod, we'll be sort of previewing the game a little bit more, but just in, taking into account your recent record at Anfield and just how those games seem to go in recent years anyway, I mean, how do you expect Wenger to line up? You mentioned there you think that Mertesacker will come back in, considering some of the defensive frailties you've shown so far, but you know, having a look at us tonight and just knowing the threats that we've got in terms of Salah and Mane, Firmino, of course, as well. Do you expect him to sort of make any sort of specific changes to the lineup or tactical setup?
Yeah, in terms of the lineup, I think it's going to be obviously Petr Cech in goal, Skodra Mustafi, Mertesacker, and Monreal as those three centre backs or three defenders again, at the back. I think the two wing backs are always going to be Hector Bellerin and Sead Kolasinac. And then the two central midfielders, Aaron Ramsey and Granit Xhaka. And then obviously the three forwards. And I think I have a feeling that Alexis Sanchez could play. We'll find out tomorrow in Arsene Wenger's press conference. He might say it's too early for him and he doesn't want to risk him from the start. But I think he's definitely going to be in the squad. He has. He's been in full training, but he obviously hasn't played a game. But knowing Alexis Sanchez and what his sort of character's like, he will want to be starting that game. And perhaps Arsene Wenger will say yes and give him that chance. So I think it'd be Ozil, Alexis and Lacazette as the front three. Lacazette obviously leading the line.
Yeah, but that's obviously by no means a weak front three at all, is it? Of course, obviously.
No, definitely not.
Ozil can have his days, as people like to think or claim. But yeah, Sanchez and Lacazette, that's, have you seen that combination so far? Or obviously he's been out, hasn't he?
No, unfortunately, obviously Alexis has been away at the Confederations Cup, so he hasn't had an opportunity to play a competitive match with Lacazette, but they have been training together, from what I've heard, obviously. Lacazette has been banging in the goals in training. So it will be interesting to see how those two combine. I think Alexis and Ozil behind Lacazette, you know, is mouth-watering for most fans, but it just depends, you know, on the day, how the likes of Ozil sort of play, to be honest.
Sure, and we'll probably come on to talk about this in a bit more detail, but, I mean, just by what you've seen tonight, I mean, is there any particular area where you think that we could get a lot of joy early on that you think that there's going to be particular sort of safeguarding against?
Yeah, I think in March, that game at Anfield, the 3-1.
Yeah.
I think the high pressing caused Arsenal a lot of problems. And I think that was the game when they put Alexis on the bench for tactical reasons.
Yes.
That was after he had a training ground bust up. But yeah, no, I think the high pressing is a big problem for Arsenal. And the only thing different, really, is that they have someone like Lacazette, perhaps, or Mertesacker, obviously leading at the back. maybe that will make a difference. But like you said, his lack of pace is a worry against Mane and Firmino. Put some Opta stats ahead of the game. I just saw that Mane has been directly involved in 15 goals in 7 appearances at Anfield, which is pretty impressive. He's a guy who seems to score against Arsenal. I think him and Firmino have got 6 goals and 2 assists between them, which is really a really impressive record. But yeah, Arsenal don't have the best of records at Anfield, and I just worry about their defence, as I do every single week, to be honest. But up front, I don't think they have any problems in scoring. And I've seen the way Liverpool are defending this season. I can imagine a goal fest, to be honest.
Yeah, could be quite similar to the game that we saw tonight, obviously. But it could be interesting to see what the start's like as well. Because obviously, with Liverpool starting fast tonight, and some games in the past against Arsenal where we've started in a similar style. So yeah, I'm sure it's going to be pretty frenetic, actually. But thanks so much for that, Chris. Obviously, we'll bring you back in towards the end just to talk about the game in a little bit more detail. Just bring you in, Guy. I mean, before we get on to anything specific about what we've seen of the season so far, very, very little of it, of course. But pivotal game tonight, of course, in the second leg at Anfield against Hoffenheim, and to see us rolling out so comfortably as winners. I mean, what did you make of the performance?
We were frightening going forward. Defensively, still got our issues, as kind of the same with Arsenal there. But yeah, I think we were very good. And the biggest thing I'd take from today, obviously the result's huge and what it means that we're actually in the Champions League. But performance-wise, the midfield looked actually like alive today, and all three of them performed. And before a huge game against Arsenal, it's good to see that Henderson and Wijnaldum are starting to perform, especially because I think Chan was doing all right anyway. But them two were coming into a lot of criticism because they haven't performed all season, and today they were both excellent. And I think most of the team was, to be fair. But yeah, getting back in the Champions League, I mean, it impacts everything at the club, our stature in world football, our ability to attract better players, and hopefully we see more of that in the next week or so. But yeah, it's huge, and the performance to score, what was it, 4 goals, it was just great. And less said about the defending, the better. But yeah, if we can score 4 goals, we'll win most games, hopefully.
Yeah, obviously that fast start that we saw as well, I think it was like 3 goals around after almost like 20 minutes, it seemed to be. But that fast start, as I was talking to Chris about, you know, we've seen that sort of reminiscent of some of the games we had against Arsenal, you know, that 13-14 season game, obviously you'll remember at Anfield. But just the fast start tonight and sort of Emre Can's goals, I mean, it was good to see him making those runs forward, wasn't it? I think one of the things that we've seen sort of labelled at this midfield, they've not looked anywhere near dynamic enough. I know you, tonight you were saying they looked alive, which is obviously can help. I thought they all pressed really, really well actually throughout the night. Whether or not they're, I still have doubts over Henderson in the 6 in terms of just the various bits and pieces he's got to do there. But pressing wise, I thought they were all really good tonight, especially himself. Just to touch upon Emre Can first, I think it's sort of weird to see him on a hat trick. I think there's some stat after the game that it's the first game he's ever scored 2 goals in, to be honest. So I think it was foreign territory for him as well. But what did you make of him sort of, bursting through and making those late runs into the box? We saw some of that last season, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably one of the weaker parts of his games, but I think he's capable of doing anything in midfield, really. I mean, in terms of young midfielders, I mean, people obviously point to Pogba and stuff and like that, but Can is very much up there in the Premier League in terms of young midfielders. And I think he's similar age to Xhaka, so yeah, obviously different players. But yeah, Can tonight especially was fantastic. But in terms of getting in the box, I mean, he is that good technically that he should be able to score these goals. And the fact that this is the only time he scored 2 in his career is kind of mad. But for us, really, he's played mainly deeper, but it is good to see that he can play further forward, especially with the Coutinho debacle and Lallana being injured. So we do need Chan to be able to link the midfield to the attack, and also combine with Mane and Mane, Salah, and Firmino, and him and Mane today. Them two and Moreno, I think they just kind of controlled the game, especially in our attacking. I think everything came from that side, really. I mean, that's not taking anything away from Trent being good, because he was, but that triangle of on the left was just fantastic. It was just dangerous every time we went forward. And if Chan can keep up this, how would you word it, fluency in attack, I think that's kind of what he's lacked at times. I think it's just another development, what is already a great prospect and a great player at the moment, but he can certainly get better.
Yeah, so sometimes I think he's been accused of not making a decision fast enough, but I think that... when he joins in with those other attackers and thinks more quickly, he does seem to have these really effective quick flicks around the corner, things like that. And you mentioned there that triangle of Jean, Mane and Moreno. And it sort of leads nicely on to something that I don't want to talk about. I mean, the fullbacks, and we'll talk about Trent in a second, because I thought he was also excellent. But I think tonight was probably one of the first ones, or one of the first nights where I saw sort of general acceptance across the board. I'm sure there's still a few of the fact that Alberto Moreno played well. This relationship that he seems to be establishing with Mane, we didn't see too much of it last season, of course, because he didn't get the chance to play many games. But there does seem to be a real potency there, doesn't it, in terms of having that option for Mane to have that outlet to his left, making those overlapping runs. And from the looks of things so far, Klopp seems to be, in investing in that. I mean, I don't know to say to many people that it's not much of a surprise, because you are a big Moreno fan. Obviously, I'm a big Moreno fan as well. But is it a case of the positives of that partnership outweigh the negatives?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly does. I mean, if you look at the three games they've played together, I mean, in terms of attacking, they've been pretty damn good all three games, really. I mean, Hoffenheim, there was a couple, the first hot leg was a couple of mad moments, but this relationship, I think it was kind of flagged last year's pre-season, and then Milner came in, and then Mane obviously played on the right, so you can never really saw it again, because obviously Moreno played like five games last year for some reason. But this season, if that is to be the continued left-hand side partnership, the negatives don't really come into play for me, because you can always fix, or you can always help out a player who's defensively suspect. If we are getting another centre-back, whether it's Van Dijk or whoever, but hopefully it'll be Van Dijk, because he's an absolute freak, that's going to help that situation hugely. And as we've seen in these few games, that Moreno and Mane, it's a fullback's worst nightmare. And it's unlimited amount of attacking potential there. And I don't know how you deal with it, because Mane comes inside, he can shoot. Moreno goes on the outside. He hasn't got the same delivery as, say, Robertson, but he's faster, and I think he prefers cutting back rather than crossing. But if we kind of move away from Moreno, but we have two left backs now who can actually go forward, so we actually have backup in that area. So attacking full backs is what we missed last season so much, when we were missing our fluency in the winter months. It's now great to just have full backs who can actually impact the game. And we talked about the midfield being a bit too steady. The fullbacks have really helped in improving our attacking play, and we have needed both of them. I know Gomez isn't really attacking, but Trent, Moreno, and Robertson have been fantastic to start the season, I'd say.
Yeah, and on the other side, as you mentioned, Trent Alexander-Arnold's rested in midweek for this Champions League qualifier. Almost, sort of crazy to even think that's been the case. With Klein out at the moment, he seems to be really taking his chance there. I mean, what did you think of his performance again? Obviously, lots of praise went his way after the first leg with that free kick. He didn't score tonight, but I thought constant outlet, and he did seem to be more switched on defensively, albeit I think a couple of times got caught out, but he seemed to pay more attention to that side of his game, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Trent was fantastic. I think he's been fantastic every time he's played, really. Tonight, I think he didn't get as much support from the midfield, and I don't think Salah's switched on as Mane is defensively, but Trent dealt with it very well. I thought he was a bit isolated, but obviously I think Matip had a very good game, which helped. But people got in behind Trent a couple times, but I'd probably not blame Trent there because he is 18, for God's sake. But he's so good. In terms of prospects, he's probably our biggest since Sterling, and before that it was probably like Gerrard. He's one of these big prospects that we've sparingly had at Liverpool in the last decade or decade plus, really. So yeah, hopefully his development isn't interrupted by an injury or anything. But yeah, he looked pretty damn ready for this level of competition. And Hoffenheim aren't mugs. They're a very good team. And he looked unfazed. Obviously, the first leg he scored the free kick, and today he looked defensively sound. He's going to be a big part of the future. And I hope that Klein does struggle to get back in the team more, not with his fitness, but because Trent is performing, because Trent has the potential to be one of the best fullbacks in the world. For me, it's early days, but that attacking talent, it's just scary in an 18-year-old fullback.
No, it's obviously incredibly positive for the future. I think Klein will definitely have a role to play this season. Absolutely,
once
he comes back in, I think people sort of underestimate how many games we've got. But it's fantastic to see Trent involved early on, and I think as we're speaking to Chris about, with Jack Wilshere and the relationship that Arsenal fans have with him as a guy who's growing up with their through the academy, similar with Trent, of course, and sort of two moments. I remember in pre-season where he went through Frank Ribery quite early on and just let him know he was there, and then tonight as well, when we won a free kick in a dangerous area, watching Emre Can and Henderson sort of pick up the ball and give it to this 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid, and going more or less going, go on then. It's absolutely hilarious that people have got that trust in him, but it obviously bodes incredibly well for his future as well. You mentioned there that he was helped by Matip, who I thought had another good game tonight, building on how he did against Palace as well. And I guess it sort of goes to emphasise how having a centre back who's sort of calm and talks his way through the game alongside a young fullback, or a fullback who's going to be more attacking, is really really effective, really useful. I think most people came out with a positive tonight, so I don't want to dwell on this for too long. But Lovren, I thought tonight had another poor game, to be honest. If you look at the fact that both of those goals were as a result of decisions that he made, poor decisions. And do you think now that it's becoming a little bit more obvious to people that maybe some of Moreno's deficiencies? I'm not claiming he's a perfect fullback by any means, but some of a fullback's deficiencies can often be down to the centre back that's alongside them. And just give your thoughts, I guess, on what you thought of Lovren tonight.
Yeah, I mean, when you've won the biggest game in probably since the Europa League final,
bad to say anything bad.
Yeah, it's bad to pick out negatives. But yeah, I mean, the first goal was just utter stupidity, and I don't know why you're trying to play out from the back there. I know we do tend to play out, overplay a bit, but that was just really, really stupid. And he just seems lost at times. Like he just seems stranded. Like there's a disconnect between him and other players, and then he tries to overcompensate by pretty much holding hands with whoever. And you can't do that with Alibi because he'd end up being centre forward. And then he kind of gets really tight to Matip, so it kind of just breaks down the team. And It's really weird. I think on the second goal he was obviously less to blame. He didn't really get jumped too much, but it was 2-on-1, and I think Matip was pretty poor for that goal as well. So, but Matip has been very I think he was very good overall today. But yeah, Lovren, he's clearly the weak link in the team. I know people don't like Moreno and stuff like that, but we've seen it in the past when we had a good left centre back in Sacco. People don't talk about Moreno as much. It's pretty clear. If we have a good left centre back, the attacking fullback, there's less pressure on him to defend. It obviously, Moreno does do really stupid things at times, even when we had a good defender next to him. But it takes away the pressure and it takes away the spotlight, because at the moment, Moreno does seem to get picked out for pretty much stuff that's not his fault, but he just looks like he's doing stupid things, like pressing the goalkeeper. I mean, there was at least three players who could have helped that mistake, but no, you pick out him. It's weird, but yeah, having a better left centre back kind of fixes the biggest hole in our team for since Sacco obviously got his, well, he killed his relationship with Klopp, whatever reason that is, and then we've always had a gap since Rafa left, really, haven't we? It's not been the same, and hopefully Van Dijk or otherwise, it's going to be sorted this season, and hopefully Matip can improve further, because versus Watford he wasn't great, but the other games he's been pretty damn good, I think. So hopefully there's a partnership for Matip come the end of the window.
Yeah, interesting to see us with Robertson against Panis as well. I thought he had a really assured debut as well, and you mentioned some of the deliveries he put in from wide areas were really, really strong as well. But again, you're seeing somebody who's playing alongside, I think, Klavan on the day as well, so we're yet to see what he'd be like as a young, you know, pretty inexperienced fullback as well alongside Dejan Lovren. So I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see his head fall off as well, but I'm sure we'll have we'll have time to see that yet. Hopefully it's not against Arsenal. but another player I want to talk on, I don't want to dwell on any negatives, obviously, when you win a game so handsomely, but Mane, I thought was, I mean, despite not scoring tonight, I thought he was absolutely fantastic in terms of the influence he had on the game. Just the sheer threat that he posed throughout the entire match, really. Towards the end, sort of flagging a little bit because he was knackered. But do you think some people have said it, but do you think he's really taking on more responsibility in Coutinho's absence? He looks to have like an added assured nature to his performances, doesn't he?
He looks like a real leader in the team. I mean, last season he obviously dropped deep at times, but this season he's just looking like, he just looks like he's the central hub of the team. Obviously that was Coutinho last season, and if he does stay, he'll probably come back and take some of that away, but when Mane has the ball, you know something's going to happen. He doesn't give the ball away loads, but there's always something that happens. And I think he did it twice tonight, and it led to either a chance or a goal. He did that weird back heel to Chan, and it worked twice. And it was like, you know he's going to do it, but you can't stop him. It's just mad. And this is probably a bit biased, but in terms of the Premier League, he's probably one of the most unplayable players at the moment. I know it's very early on, but last season, before obviously AFCON and his injury, I mean, there wasn't many players better than him in the league. And if he continues this form, there'll be people talking about him, and hopefully in the same breath as Alexis Sanchez and even Eden Hazard, because that's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for having world-class players in our team, and they're probably the two best. I know Sanchez played up front a bit last season, but they're probably the two best wide forwards in the league. So hopefully we see Mane in that conversation.
I have to get him to sign a new deal, though, because I'm not having any of this running down the contract nonsense. So, I mean, I thought one moment tonight that actually stood out to me. It wasn't really a moment of him doing anything on the ball or anything like that, but it was when that Hoffenheim player went in on him. Pretty terrible tackle, actually, when you looked at the replay. Mm. It was high, could have been a red. But it took Mane out, and then Mane sort of got back up. By this stage, we were 3-0 up, and he sort of had a smile to himself, because I think the crowd around him were really angry that foul had gone in, but he just looked at them, smiled, going like, it's fine, look at us, we're all over them, no wonder they're angry. And then he started to G the crowd up as well. So yeah, I think he's very much becoming this leader figure amongst the squad. Does seem to be the way for sure. Just to bring Chris back in now, guys, so we could talk a bit more about the weekend's game. I think we could probably talk endlessly about Hoffenheim, really, and how we've started the season. But Chris, I mean, we spoke about some of the defensive frailties you guys had shown, some of the uncertainty, I guess, and yeah, we've spoken, I spoke to Guy just there about our own defensive uncertainty at times. Obviously, the 3-3 against Watford showcased that in abundance, and we showcased that seemingly every game. But are your expectations for this game an end-to-end style of flow, or do you think there's no way in which you'd expect Wenger to take a more cautious approach?
Wenger doesn't really do cautious, to be honest. I mean, I haven't seen a 4-5-1 at Arsenal for, you know, quite a few seasons now.
Yeah.
It's really straight. Arsene Wenger is a football purist, and, you know, if that means Arsenal are going to leak goals at the back, then, you know, so be it. The main thing for Arsene Wenger is that Arsenal score perfect goals. They play beautiful football. And, yeah, I think Sunday's game is going to be a goal fest. I think it's going to be end-to-end. And I don't really know which way it's going to go. One thing I would say is that Arsenal, they haven't actually won a Premier League away game against a top six side since January 2015.
Wow.
They've lost seven and drawn five since 2015, which is, you know, pretty, pretty poor, to be honest. And yeah, I think that's where Arsenal really struggled against the good sides in the league. And any side really which has a game plan and knows how Arsenal play end up getting a result. Even when they changed to three at the back, I think a lot of teams still managed to exploit the weaknesses in Arsenal's defence. There was a draw, there was a game at Middlesbrough towards the end of the season, which Arsenal were really, really poor in. There were games every week Arsenal end up giving the opposition three or four chances, clear-cut chances. And Arsenal need to cut that out if they're going to win a major trophy, if they're going to challenge for a major trophy too. But like I said earlier, maybe the fact that they're not playing in the Champions League will give them that extra focus, like it did with Chelsea last season. And perhaps they can go one step further because they don't obviously have that distraction.
Yeah, one thing that's always surprised me about Arsenal, and I can never understand it, is yeah, there's certain games you go into, maybe talk about that Chelsea, the Chelsea games over the years that you guys have played, or playing ourselves as well, where you can sort of predict the type of games that you're going to come up against. Like for us, maybe this weekend you'd predict that we'd start very fast. Having seen what we were like tonight, it's going to be high press, it's going to be fast, it's going to be aggressive. And Arsenal don't seem to be prepared for that. They all seem to be caught off guard. I mean, would it surprise you if you saw that again, or is it just more or less what we discussed already, that, you know, those things don't seem to change in matches like this?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to be like a lack of concentration in key moments of games, especially after half time. Arsenal seem to have a really poor record of conceding goals, you know, in the 10-15 minutes after the break. But I'm not really sure what the explanation is behind that, or whether it's just a coincidence. But Arsenal just seem to concede, you know, really sloppy goals. You don't see many worldies scored against Arsenal. They're usually defensive mistakes, errors of concentration, from set pieces as well. Obviously, Arsenal had a weakness. It's difficult to explain, really. I mean, they've got a defensive expert in Steve Bould, who's assistant manager. I don't really know how much free rein he has over the defence. From what I've been told, he doesn't have much of an influence there, which is a shame, because I think Arsenal could do with a defensive coach like Martin Keown. And obviously, maybe Liverpool could do with a Jamie Carragher back at the club as well. I think it's always good to bring these ex-players back into the scene. And Arsenal have really struggled and really failed to do that over the years. Jens Lehmann is sort of a rare occurrence, to be honest. I'd like to see someone like Patrick Vieira, who's now had experience at Man City, New York City FC, come in back to Arsenal, coaching the midfielders, coaching the players, giving them that lift. I think it's always good when a lot of these Arsenal players have been brought in by Wenger. They say their idols are Vieira, Henri, Pires. And, you know, they say that because these guys are legends and they should be involved in the first team.
look forward to Colo Torre rejoining the club as a defensive coach. You heard it here first, guys. I mean, Guy bringing you in.
Love that.
wouldn't it be just great? But, I mean, you know, from what Chris has said there, I mean, you can expect this game to be end-to-end. Both teams, you know, are attacking teams. Some of the things you were saying about their defensive woes, you know, eerily reminiscent of our own fortunes, of course. But, I mean, do you think this is more just like rinse and repeat for Jurgen in terms of like the approach for this game this weekend? Would you expect many changes in terms of the lineup?
I'm not sure. Obviously, it's an international break afterwards, so it might be easier to say play, because obviously the last change is obviously we swapped Moreno for Robertson, but Moreno's not on international duty, so you could probably easily justify Moreno playing over Robertson, who's on Scotland duty. So I think there'll be less changes than the Crystal Palace game, because some people will be having a break. I think it'll be relatively similar. I think the only debate would probably be Robertson versus Moreno. I think Lovren will keep his spot, even though Clavan did relatively well, because unfortunately, he's our first choice. But yeah, it's kind of weird. We both have mad Spanish fullbacks. we have centre backs who don't seem to be defenders first. it's really weird. But I think the main difference between this Arsenal game and ones previous, I think this is the first time we've played you when you've been using three at the back, so that might be more of an interesting one. But we played Hoffenheim, we played three at the back, and Crystal Palace, so we've played it quite a lot of this season already, so we should know where the weak spots are and all that. So using the wide areas, as we saw tonight, should be key. And as we saw tonight, Mane, Moreno and Chan, we can exploit those areas. So we need to do what we did tonight, basically. But I'm not biggest fan. I don't rate Mustafi that much. I think he's a bit overrated. And just out of curiosity, where's Koscielny? I know he got suspended, but how long is he out for?
He'll be back for the game, actually. He's been suspended. Yeah, he was suspended at the end of the last season. So.
Yeah.
It basically carried on into the first few games of this season. So, yeah, he'd be back, actually. I completely forgot about that. Mm. I don't know if he'd be match fit. Obviously, the press conference is tomorrow, so we'll find out. Mm. But if Wenger says he's match fit, then I guess you could put him in that starting lineup. And that would probably shore up the defence a bit more. Even a half-fit Koscielny.
Yeah, I mean, our attacking line against an aging Mertesacker and Monreal isn't the greatest. But yeah, if Koscielny does come back in, I think it'll add something. But yeah, it should be an interesting game. Obviously, their formation's changed, where our attacking lineup's kind of not changed loads, but it has been tweaked with Salah, because there's another threat that, well, if it's Kolasinac or if it's even Oxlade-Chamberlain, that the wing-backs will have to be switched on defensively for our fullbacks and our wide forwards. So it'll be quite an intriguing game, I think. And hopefully with our big game record, it continues. But I think it'll be more difficult. And the midfield battle will be interesting, because Xhaka's came in with a lot of criticism, but I think he's got a lot of potential. And whoever plays next to him, whether it's Ramsey or, I think Elneny started against Leicester, didn't he? So whoever starts next to him, it'll be quite an interesting midfield battle as well.
Yeah, we barely mentioned Salah, to be honest, but it's just, I think, you know, such was the performance.
Too many good players.
The performance of Mane tonight. But I think, yeah, there's definitely going to be some races up and down that touchline, or up and down each touchline on the weekend, for sure, because there's some fast fullbacks there.
Get Walcott on for pace whoringness.
That's gonna, yeah, just really just go for it. So, I mean, Chris, if you were looking at an area where you think that you could potentially have some joy, I mean, is it Lacazette or whoever's playing, targeting the likes of Lovren, even Moreno on that side? I think everyone seems to attack that side. But
yeah, I was going to mention Moreno. Yeah, do Liverpool fans like him, or
it's, I mean, we're the only two.
You're speaking to two who actually seem to be two of the more reasoned ones when it comes to Moreno, but I don't think he's half as bad as people have made out. I really do think it's the axis of chaos that is Love Renner Moreno, you can't have two. You can have one, but you really can't have two who are like that. But I mean, what I was going to ask, I mean, do you reckon it's going to be Lacazette who leaning onto that sort of player, or would you, you know, considering how bad we are from set pieces, it seems, and in the air, could this be a game for your beloved Frenchman? Or the other Frenchman, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if Arsene Wenger started with Olivier Giroud up front, purely for the fact that Lacazette, you know, is his club record signing, is his main man. And whether it suits the game or not, Arsene Wenger usually goes with the players he wants, not necessarily the player that suits the game, which obviously is a little bit strange. But I do think it's going to be Lacazette. I think Giroud is more of an impact player, and he's shown that over
he's
the past
so effective,
season.
Yeah.
He has a good record against us as well, I think.
Yeah, he does seem to score against Liverpool. And I'd say, similar to Walcott as well, always seems to turn up at Anfield. Although I'm probably thinking, you know, over a decade ago, I remember that assist for Adebayor. But yeah, generally, I'd be surprised if it wasn't Ozil, Alexis, Lacazette as the front three. And that does excite me, to be honest. I do think that's a really, really strong attacking trio. And similar to Liverpool's attacking trio, it's a mouth-watering contest between a lot of really quality players, to be honest.
Yes, I do think it's going to be pretty frenetic indeed. I don't think there's going to be much...
Going from Welbeck to Sanchez is a bit of an upgrade.
that's harsh. That's harsh on that guy.
It is, but it's Sanchez, man. I think.
It's true, yeah.
There's a bit of a jump there.
It'd be very interesting to see what they're like.
Welbeck can't finish. That's a big problem. So I can imagine Arsene Wenger just plonking Sanchez back in the starting lineup. As a sort of, it would be a big statement as well, just to sort of say, you know, he's not going anywhere. He's going to start this game. And I think if he does start, then I'd be really surprised if he leaves towards the end of the window. I don't think he's going to play and then leave.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting. Obviously, we have seen that before, but yeah, I think it would be interesting to see how he links up with Lacazette as well. Hopefully there's no chemistry there whatsoever. So, I mean, just to wrap up, guys, I mean, I'll ask you for predictions now. I mean, put you on the spot here. I mean, Guy, coming to you first, I mean, what do you think the scoreline is going to be whilst we're on the wave of that result tonight? Is it going to be, are we going to be 3-0 up after 20 minutes again, or is it going to be more of a fighting fire with fire in this game?
Oh God, I don't know. I don't know if we'll be 3-0 up after 20 minutes or so, but I'll ride the wave of positivity. I think we'll win, but I mean, I don't think it'll be comfortable. I'll say 3-2 to us. I don't trust our defence, and
no, we're going to concede.
Hopefully our attack just outdoes their attack.
Yeah, we're definitely conceding. I mean, and Chris, coming to you, I mean, would you go for the same, but for Arsenal to win?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, 3-2 to Arsenal. I just think it's going to be end-to-end, frenetic, and you can just imagine the defending being all over the place from both sides. So, yeah, I'd say 3-2 Arsenal.
Yeah, I'm tempted to go high-scoring draw to the 3-3, but we've already had one of those this season as well, so I'll probably lean on the side of going with Guy and thinking, yeah, maybe 3-3, maybe Mane can finally turn up at Anfield scores. Because he's clearly been so lazy this season, hasn't he? But anyway, guys, thanks so much for coming on and helping me preview the game. Just before we go, I mean, do either of you have anything that you'd like to plug? I mean, Chris, come to you first.
I guess just my social media pages. I'm on Twitter at @ChrisWheatley_ and Facebook, Chris Wheatley Goal.
Sure, and guys, do you have anything to plug for yourself?
I was on the Face Off this week. I seem to be the co-host of that now. so yeah, check that out. And my Twitter is @GuyDrinkle. I basically just ramble about Moreno. That's basically my niche nowadays. But yeah, hopefully I'll move on to other place soon when you all accept him.
It's a hell of a niche. It really is. You are the expert. But I mean, thanks to everybody for listening. I'm sure it's going to be another high paced, high energy game this weekend. After a positive result like we had against Hoffenheim tonight, let's hope we can repeat that this weekend. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week previewing the next game as well. So thanks for listening, everyone.
Social Podcast Network.